So I picked a topic. I think maybe we've talked about it sometime in the past, but I know it's been a while, and I thought it might be a good time of the year for us to kind of review this topic again, because it's something that we need to kind of be aware of. And you might be wondering, well, what's special about this time of the year? Well, you know, everybody's kind of, it's back to school time, right? And as we'll see as we go through the slides, you know, there's a pretty tight connection here between humanism and our schools. And so I thought it would be a good opportunity, as a lot of our folks are returning to college or thinking about college or high school or middle school, we'll find this philosophy kind of pervasive in everything, really starting in the earliest grades. And we'll see that. But it's part of our, you know, the Lord wants us to be aware of these philosophies in the world and to not be spoiled by these philosophies. We'll look at some scriptures as we go through where the Lord warns us about these kinds of things. And so this is really kind of an application, a specific application of a philosophy that has really just gone worldwide. It's everywhere in the world, and it's in every place in the world. And so we need to be aware of that and recognizing and being on the lookout for it, so that we're not taken in by this kind of philosophy. And so we want to be watching out for it, whether we're in school or for parents. We want to be watching out for our kids. A lot of this kind of stuff also comes up in the workplace, and it is pushed pretty heavily there too. And of course, it's pushed in other forms as well. And so thought it would be good for us to just refresh ourselves about humanism and what it is and how it works and what it's all about, so that we can hopefully recognize it when we run across it. And it won't take long to run across it. So humanism really could be described as the largest and most prevalent system of unbelief in God today. That's kind of a funny way to say it, unbelief in God. But that's really what it is, and that's it really from their own words. If you go and you look at, there's a website I kind of recommend you go take a look at, just so you can see a lot of the things that they're about. And many of these statements in this set of slides is directly off the American Humanist website. This is all out in the open. They're not trying to hide anything that they're doing. You would think that they would, given that they're trying to really subvert a lot of things. But these days, it's very, very open, and they have budgets of millions of dollars that they go and they try to influence. It's based in Washington. They lobby and try to have lots and lots of influence, and we'll see that it's unfortunately working pretty well. But if you want a definition of humanism, okay, what they'll say is it's the denial of any power or moral value superior to that of humanity. So it's a rejection of religion in favor of a belief in the advancement of humanity by its own effort. So if you think about it, humanism, humans are at the top when we're talking about humanism, right? There is no God. There's no supreme being that sets the standards. It's humans that set their own standards, and that's really what they're trying to promote. So a second part of their definition is that it's a philosophical position that stresses the autonomy of human reason in contradiction to the authority of the church. Okay, so it's going to put human wisdom and human reason above God, above any type of moral teaching from religion, from any religion. If you go to their website, you'll see statements like this. This says here, the American Humanist Society says, "We strive to bring about a progressive society where being good without a God is an accepted way to live life. We're accomplishing this through our defense of civil liberties and secular governance, by our outreach to the growing number of people without traditional religious faith, and through a continued refinement and advancement of the humanist worldview." So that's a big mouthful, and we'll kind of dissect some of these statements here over the next couple of slides, but notice they're working towards bringing together a progressive society. And that's one of the things that you'll hear a lot. And if you think about it, we hear this a lot in our society. Here's another quote where it says, "Humanism is a philosophy of joyous service for the greater good of all humanity." So how many of us have heard those kind of statements where this is for the greater good of mankind, right? And that's those kinds of phrases are thrown around all the time. And that's really one of the big ways that they appeal to people is by saying all of these things that we're doing are for the greater good of everyone. So you'll see things like this: the greater good of all humanity, of application of new ideas of scientific progress for the benefit of all. So they claim to be trying to help all of mankind through their efforts, and they're promoting that. They talk about some of their values, and I looked at these, I'm like, I think I heard this at work this week. You just hear these kinds of things pushed, in your workplace and other things like that. But, they're saying, if you're a humanist and you join our ranks, you'll have a safe place where you can respectfully be yourself. Whatever you want to do, we're fine with that. And as we'll see, if you go look at their website, you'll see they pretty much stand for everything that is ungodly. I mean, they promote homosexuality, they promote euthanasia, they promote abortion. It's like it's the list of all the things that God hates. And if it's something that God hates, it's pretty much something that they've advocated and put money into to try to propagate into society. It's really sad when you see all of the things that they're trying to promote. But what they're saying is you can be a humanist and you can do what you want. We'll respect you for that. They say here disagreements are okay because each person is loved. And we listen without judgment, except to people who believe in God. That we're quickly judged. They say each individual is recognized for the gifts they bring to the table, and they say we can count on others need us, and we can count on them when we're in need. So they're trying to build up this idea of community amongst each other. This message is appealing to a lot of people, and it's causing a lot of people to bite and go after it. Tom?
Well, you were going on that, but I mean, even deeper as you read them. The biblical ideas. As written, they are biblical ideas.
Some of these.
Each individual is recognized for the gifts they give, and that was one of the verses I used for offerings. Sure, but again, the twist, and that's what a lot of people don't look at. They don't see the subtlety in that twist. Because if disagreements are okay, yes. Because if we see someone wrong, we must talk to them. We must straighten them out. But the twist still isn't there yet. I was pretty sure you were going out. They were slapping me pretty hard in the face as we were looking at them.
Yeah. So it's true that many of these statements, if you just take it at a surface value, that they can be... many of them can be applied to us as well. But then when you take it to its full extent, you realize, well, no, that's not it. Because disagreements are okay. So what's behind that statement is that they're not saying that they're going to have a disagreement and then they're going to resolve it by going to an authority. They're just saying, we're going to agree to disagree. You can be homosexual if you want, and I'll not be homosexual, and we're all happy. And that's completely, contradictory to God's teaching. So there's a sense in which disagreements are okay. We know that there will be disagreements in the church, but we also know that ultimately God wants us to come to the same mind and the same judgment. So we would say disagreements, yes, we know that we're going to have them, so they're okay in that sense, but we have to get ultimately, we don't want disagreements. They would say, there'll be disagreements, but we're all just one big happy family. And you're okay, I'm okay. We all love each other. And that's their attitude on that one. And there's many other ones as well. But, you know, the first one there, a safe place where folks can be uniquely themselves. Well, there's a degree to which maybe you could say that's true in the church, as long as that being unique doesn't go beyond anything that the Lord says. I mean, if we want to dress a certain way, as long as it's as modest and so on, that's fine. But where they go with that is, again, if you want to support gay marriage or you want to do this or that, you can go out to that extreme and you'll be safe here. And that would not be true in the Lord's church, right? If somebody came in and started advocating one of these types of teachings, we would say, nope, here's what God says about it. Okay, if somebody came in the door and started trying to say, well, homosexuality is okay, we would immediately go to Romans chapter 1 and say, well, nope, it's not. And we have examples from the scriptures where Paul, you know, made it clear that he wasn't going to allow these false teachings even for an hour in the Lord's church. And so the Lord's church is not a safe place for false teachers. But you can see, like you say, that there's a way where you could sort of twist it and it sounds okay to a lot of people. But then when you start really digging into it, you realize, well, no, where they're really going with this is completely 100% opposed to what the Lord would have us to do. Now, notice one of the, or think about one of the phrases that we saw in that sort of declaration of their mission, of what they are about, their goal, their stated goal. I mean, you can go to their website, and this is what they're all about. It's a progressive society, a few words, and it says, without a God. So they are working towards a society that does not have God in the picture. And they're very, very busy trying to achieve that goal. And they're very organized about it. And this has been going on for a long time. And we need to realize that this isn't just a notion of a few people here and there, but that they've gotten very organized and they've really, they're pushing this in a lot of different ways in our societies. And so you know, they've been very open about it since the early 1900s. 1933 was when they published their first manifesto that described what these beliefs are. They updated it in 1973 and then again in 2003. So they're very open now about what they want in this progressive society without God. And if we think about some of the folks who are noted humanists, we'll recognize a number of these faces, right? We all know about Albert Einstein, right? Some of us might remember Dr. Carl Sagan from back in the 1980s. He had a very well-known, he was a very well-known astronomer and had a show called Cosmos that was very popular, where he was really trying to push and sell the idea of evolution to the population in the 1980s. We know Ted Turner, you know, the founder of CNN. Some of us may be familiar with Bill Nye, the science guy from public television. A lot of us or our kids may have watched that. He's really a pretty rabid atheist and evolutionist and humanist. He really, really is one of the more militant ones. But, you know, he uses this persona in the television show to appeal to a lot of people to let their guard down. Say, oh, Bill Nye, I know who that is. He's a great guy. And then you start listening to his humanist philosophy and you realize, oh, he's not a great guy at all. Okay. And others, there's Benjamin Spock, you know, the famous Dr. Spock, and how he told everybody how to raise their kids, which again was completely contradictory to what the scriptures teach. We see kind of what the effect in society has been of not of not using the rod on the child and not disciplining as the scriptures would teach. There's B.F. Skinner, there's Jonas Salk, John Dewey, Senator Barney Frank. You know, there's all kinds of folks. If you start looking, they're really all over society, and you don't really realize what significance they have, but they're all very active about pushing this philosophy. From the Humanist Manifesto 3, the most recent one, notice what it says here. It says, humanism is a progressive philosophy of life that, without supernaturalism, affirms our ability and responsibility to lead ethical lives of personal fulfillment that aspire to the greater good of humanity. The life stance of humanism, guided by reason, inspired by compassion, and informed by experience, encourages us to live life well and fully. So again, as we were saying a minute ago, you could pick out little phrases here and there, and that would sound perfectly fine, right? I mean, how all of us in here have a responsibility to lead ethical lives, don't we? According to what God teaches. Now, that's not their definition of leading ethical lives, but when you just see the phrase, who's going to argue with the phrase that says we all need to lead ethical lives, right? Who's going to argue with trying to help humanity, right, and help others, right? Who's going to argue with being inspired by compassion, right? We look at Jesus Christ, and we see the ultimate example of compassion, and, you know, our goal as Christians is to be like Christ. And so we see a lot of these phrases and words being used that are very enticing to people. And it's grabbed a lot of people, and they've looked at it and said, this is a good thing. And a lot of people are led astray by things like this. And this is where, you know, again, we need to remember what the Lord teaches about these kinds of philosophies. He says here in Colossians 2, in verse 8, he says, beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. Now again, as we've noted many times in the scriptures, when the verse starts with beware, it generally means, well, this is something that catches a lot of people, right? This is something that catches people off guard. And he's trying to get our attention to say, we need to be aware of this. And we need to watch out. And it's true. I mean, we see these kinds of subtle phrases being used, and it's trapped a lot of people and led them down the wrong path. And so we need to be careful not to be caught up with these things. And we're going, you know, we'll see these kinds of phrases and ideas that humanism promotes. It, you know, again, they're smart, and they know how they can propagate this philosophy. And if you go and you look in your school books and you listen to some of your shows out there, you're going to hear these kinds of things, or read these kinds of things, and hear these kinds of things. And again, that's why we're kind of bringing it up at this time of the year. A lot of people are back to school, so I would say for those of you back in school, take a critical eye to what you're reading in your books and notice some of the philosophies in those books that line up with what we're talking about here with humanism, and try to catch those phrases and recognize them for what they are. Okay, it's not trying to teach Christianity. It's trying to teach the opposite, right? To promote a progressive society without God. Now, there's also, if you read on the site and you keep reading, there's a lot of double talk. And things like this, where it says, humanism is non-theistic. Okay, and so then they try to define what they mean by that. They say, by this, we don't mean to say there's no God. Okay, well, that sort of lets your guard down a little bit. But then you keep reading and you see, well, wait a minute. Okay, they're contradicting themselves, because they go on to say, they say, instead we say there's no proof for the existence of any God, any gods, the supernatural, or an afterlife. And then they go on to say, therefore, we take very seriously the idea that no deity will save us. We must save ourselves. We are living the only life we'll have in the only world we know about. So they start off kind of trying to disarm people by saying, well, we're not really trying to say we're not for God. But then they turn right around and say, well, no deity is going to save us. This is the only life there is, and you know, and what they really promote is like the billboard ad here, where it says, "Enjoy life now. There is no afterlife." Right. So this is a snapshot of a billboard. So they, you know, they're running. They have lots of ad campaigns where they'll run billboards on buses or billboards or radio things and so on. And there'll be different types of things. This one was done by the Freedom From Religion organization, which these are all connected together and working together. But we'll see this kind of double talk over and over with these statements that they're making. They go on to say, humanism encompasses a variety of non-theistic views. And then they mention some of those specific views like atheism and agnosticism and rationalism and naturalism and secularism and so forth. And then they say, while adding the important element of a comprehensive worldview and a set of ethical values. Okay, so a couple of important things for us to note from this statement that they make. Okay, well, again, they're trying to say these are non-theistic views. And again, they started to try to say, well, it's not that we're not saying there's a God. But then here, they turn around and they say that they encompass these other philosophies like atheism. Well, what does atheism say with certainty? Atheism says there is no God, okay? Agnosticism is the one that says, well, I'm not sure there's a God. But atheists, they're absolutely certain that there's not a God, okay? And so, you know, these are being embraced by humanism. And so there's this double talk that on the one hand, they're trying to say, well, everybody, you know, we're non-theistic. But then they immediately turn around and mention atheism, which is anti-theistic, okay? So they're contradicting themselves. But then notice this last part of the phrase here. They're non-theistic, but then what do? They add what? They add what they call a comprehensive worldview, the way that they think the world should be, and they add a set of ethical values. Now, who in here doesn't want to be ethical? Right? Again, they're using these words that appeal to a lot of people, right? Who doesn't want to be ethical? Everybody, well, most people want to be ethical, right? But what's the big question here about ethical values? What's the question we should ask? Whose ethics, right? Who's defining what's ethical? And we'll see that their definition of ethical is far, far, far away from God's view of what's ethical. So they're going to catch a lot of people thinking, oh, this is good. I like this. But then what people don't understand is, well, no, there is an authority that determines what's ethical and what's not. And that's not the authority humanism is going after. Humanism is setting its own standards for what's ethical. Okay? And so they're setting their own ethical standards. And so really, there's a sense in which it's a religion, and they even say that amongst themselves. So here's a statement from one of the early founders of some humanist organizations in the U.S. back in the early 1900s. Here he says, human life is a thing of supreme worth in the world and must be treated as the end of all human endeavor. And then he says, this is the cornerstone of the religion of humanism. So there are folks in their own ranks that basically admit that humanism is a type of religion. They've set their own. They don't have a God. Their God is really themselves, because they put themselves at the top. and they're defining what they consider to be right and wrong. And so, but yet it's catching so many people off guard, and people are forgetting what we read there in Colossians 2, where he tells us, beware of philosophy and vain deceit and these rudiments of the world that can deceive us. And it's catching many, many people, including people in the Lord's church. Now, one of the other phrases that we've seen used and that they tend to use a lot is that they're guided by reason. Okay, well, who in here doesn't want to be reasonable? Okay? Who in here wants to be illogical about things? I mean, does the Lord want us to be illogical and unreasonable? You know, we understand that, well, no. The Lord wants us to reason. We can go and read passages about where Paul was reasoning with the ones in Athens over the Scriptures. But notice, one of the things that humanism does is it tries to pit reason against religion. And notice some of these ad campaigns that they've had, right? They've got a picture of a penny here, okay? And what have they done? Well, they've replaced one word on that penny, right? What have they replaced? They've replaced "in God we trust" with "in reason we trust," right? So they're completely trying to pit God versus reason. You can believe in God and you can be superstitious and illogical and believe these fairy tales. You'll hear all those words used by different ones. Or you can appeal to reason. And they set those things as if being religious, you can't be reasonable. And that's, as we've been going through our Wednesday night class and in our kids class over the last several months, we've been talking about Christian evidences and the tremendous evidence that God has given to support the fact that He is the Creator, and the fact that the facts actually support what the Bible says, and that we don't need to be afraid of true science. And we need to go, let's turn to 1 Timothy chapter 6. Somebody read verse 20 for us. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 20.
O Timothy, keep that which is committed to thy trust, avoiding the vain babblings and the opposition to science, falsehoods, and false.
So this problem that we're talking about now, today, is not a new problem. Okay, this was a problem some 2,000 years ago. And here is Apostle Paul writing to Timothy about these oppositions of science, falsely so called. Not really science, but they're calling it science, but it's not. And we have exactly that problem today with these teachings of evolution and these other things that humanism is promoting, right? They're trying to take science and try to make it say something and conclude something that it doesn't. And there's example after example. Just ask one of the ones that's been in the class the last little while, and I'm sure they should be able to spout off quite a number of examples. So give them a test tonight when you get home and see what they've learned about the actual evidence that supports what the Scriptures teach. But again, we see these humanists trying to pit reason against religion. And we see, you know, billboards like this, where you've got these cute girls here saying, oh, we put all of our faith in science. So what are they trying to say? Tell everybody, well, it's okay for you to do that too, right? We're just normal people like everybody else, and we put all of our faith in science, okay, not God, right? They're specifically points out that they're both atheists because they're reasonable and logical, and they've looked at what science has to say, and they've concluded that there is no God, and that's what you should do too, and it's all okay. And that's the message that they're trying to give the world through these campaigns. And we need to be armed and prepared ourselves, because we're going to hear these things in different places, and we're going to be asked, well, why do you believe in God? Okay, and we're going to be challenged in different forms, whether it's in school or neighbors or work, There's lots of different ways we're going to be challenged by this, and we need to have an answer when we're challenged, and we need to understand what the Lord, the evidence that He's given us. To make it clear, this is from the latest version of the Humanist Manifesto. Again, evolution is one set of beliefs, but humanists have adopted evolution as an important belief. Why is that? Well, if they're trying to get rid of God and say there is no God, they have to explain how we got here somehow. And the current trend to do that, the biggest trend to do that, there are a few trends actually, but the biggest one that's kind of gotten everybody since started with Darwin in the late 1800s is Darwinian evolution. And so the Humanist Manifesto actually points that out and says humans are the result of unguided evolutionary change. And again, we've studied lots and lots in our Christian Evidences class to look at all kinds of different scientific disciplines that show that unguided evolutionary change is never going to get us humans, okay? And it's just, there are many, many different sciences. You can use their own science against them and say, well, no, this is what the actual evidence is, right? God has given evidence that we can use to show that these things they're trying to say are completely wrong. Well, some might ask the question, why are they so against God? Why? What's the problem with believing in God? Well, again, the minute that somebody acknowledges that there is a supreme being that has authority that, as creator, then it gives them a responsibility to do what that creator made them for, right? It gives them an obligation that they need to serve their creator. And they know that, and they don't like that, right? Because they want to control their own lives and their own destiny, so to speak. And so they make statements like this: because there is no God, humans are responsible for their own destiny and the destiny of the world we live in. So they're taking God out of the picture so they can put themselves as the ones in charge here. It's all about mankind, okay? Another statement, they say, for the humanist, life's fulfillment emerges from individual participation in the service of humane ideals. We aim for our fullest possible development, finding wonder and awe in the joys and beauties of human existence. So they're all about finding and loving the things in this world, right? Because again, they don't believe in an afterlife. They believe this is it. And so what we need to be serving is ourselves here and now, right? What does the Lord tell us our focus needs to be in Colossians chapter 1? And I lost the reference. 3 in verse 1. Somebody read Colossians 3 and verse 1. All right, so he tells us if we're in Christ, what do we need to have our, what do we need to be exercising our minds on? Is it the things of this world? What does he say there? In verse 1. It needs to be the things above, right? But yet, we see this philosophy teaching the exact opposite, don't we? We see that the focus, okay, the focus here is on this life and fulfillment in this life, the joys of this life, of this existence. Here in a quote from the first manifesto that was published in 1933, it says, believing that religion must work increasingly for joy in living, religious humanists aim to foster the creative and manage to encourage achievements that add to the satisfactions of life. So they're all about how we live in this life and doing things that bring joy and satisfaction in this life. The focus is on this life, and that's what they're seeking after. Some are pretty blatant about their goals in life, right? Here's a statement from a humanist that says, "I'm not in search of sanctity, sacredness, or purity. These are found after this life, not in this life." And he goes on to say that he wants to basically give himself to all of these worldly pleasures, these worldly lusts. Okay, he wants to go after that. That's what this life is all about. So, you know, there's a lot of folks, maybe it wouldn't be so blatant and about their goal in life, but you find them here and there where they're pretty blatant about it, right? They're not interested in serving God and doing right. They're interested in fulfilling their own pleasures, and they'll come out and say that. And that's the whole attitude of humanism. Now, the other thing that we saw when we read the earlier statements of their goals is that they're a philosophy of compassion. It says humanism is a philosophy of compassion. Human ethics is solely concerned with meeting human needs and answering human problems for both the individual and society, and devotes no attention to the satisfaction of the desires of supposed theological entities. So here they're kind of mocking religion, right? They're saying we're not going to give any attention to satisfying what any supposed gods want us to do. Our focus here is on compassion and serving human needs. We're not worried about serving God. So again, we see there this philosophy of trying to take God out of the picture in everything they believe. They're very much anti-God here. Here's another statement from one. Here's another billboard where it says here, "Being kind with an open mind is my religion." Okay. And a statement from the Humanist Manifesto here, it says, "In the place of the old attitudes involved in worship and prayer, the humanist finds his religious emotions expressed in a heightened sense of personal life and in a cooperative effort to promote social well-being." So they're trying to substitute social work and social well-being for serving God, worshiping God, praying to God. And, you know, again, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that are fooled by these kinds of words that you see on the billboard. Is there anybody in here that doesn't want to be kind? You know, we all want to be kind, don't we? But, of course, it goes back to what Brother Michael said earlier, right? Well, who's defining what kind means, right? See that there's a lot of contradictions in what they say, but, you know, being kind is his religion. Okay, well, we need to pick up on even when we see those kinds of statements, that statement, even by taken by itself, has problems, doesn't it? Okay, we're kind because God tells us to be kind, but being kind, that's not our religion, right? Our religion is to serve God, to serve our Creator. Now, our Creator tells us we need to be kind, we need to be compassionate, we need to have love, and all of these things. But being kind, that's not our religion. And so, when we hear people make a statement like that, we need to have alarms go off and say, "Whoa, that's humanism." Okay. I remember being in India back in 2013, and there was this little kid with a cute little Mickey Mouse shirt on, and it says, "My religion is to do good." Okay, very similar to this statement here, you know, where he says his religion is to be kind. Well, here's this little cute Mickey Mouse thing where it says, "My religion is to do good." And, you know, most people are going to see that cute Mickey Mouse thing he's wearing and say, "Oh, that's cute, and that's nice," right? Is that really what we should be thinking when we see that? If we really understand what God says about things, you know, we should recognize those things for what they are, right? That is a very humanistic statement, right? where he says, my religion is to do good. Well, that's again, that's humanism. But and they're starting, you know, they're printing it on things that they sell to five-year-olds, right? If people grow up hearing these kinds of statements, you know, seeing them on billboards, and wearing clothes with them, people grow up with these statements all around them, and they begin to believe, well, these are all okay statements when they're not. And so we need to be recognizing these statements and really understanding and having some discernment to understand, well, that this statement is not a godly statement. This is not a Bible teaching here. And we need to recognize those things. And so, again, when we're sitting in a class at your work, Becky, you go through, it's teaching you about some value, or you're in a school setting where you're being taught about some subject, you need to be listening very carefully, because these kind of statements are going to be kind of tossed in here and there, and a lot of times you might not even catch them if you're not aware of these things, okay? And, you know, there's folks that are teachers here, or that are thinking about being teachers, and we need to be aware that you're going to be asked to teach things like this, and you need to be on guard so that you don't, right? And that you are catching these things and changing these things and not letting these things, letting yourself be a puppet, so to speak, of what they're trying to do here, and that you're catching these things. I remember thankfully, when I was coming through school, some of my teachers, like some of my science teachers, would say, well, you know, I've got to teach about evolution, but I don't believe evolution's true at all. You know, and thankfully, I had some teachers that sort of went out of their way to make sure that they didn't believe this was right at all, but that they had to go through the book to teach it. And, you know, if you're in that kind of a position, that's really what you ought to be doing as well, to say, this isn't right, but this is what this book says. And make it clear to everybody that you're not teaching these things and being a part of what they're trying to teach here. Humanism goes back a long, long way. And they sort of take pride, so to speak, in, you know, going back to the Greek culture and a lot of the Greek philosophers. Protagoras was a well-known Greek humanist. What was his one of his famous statements? Well, it was, man is the measure of all things. Now, what would we have to say about that statement as a Christian? Man is the measure of all things. Anybody think of a good... Okay, that's exactly right. And we find that in Ephesians chapter 4, right? Verses 11 to 13, right? There in verse 13, he tells us our goal is that we come unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. So while humanism and Protagoras and all these others want to say that man is the measure, and they're setting all the standards, and they're defining what is ethical and what's good and what's kind, as Christians, as believing God's word, we understand that our measure is Christ, and he's the one that we look to for our standard, and he's the one that we're looking to as our measure, that we're measuring ourselves against, not any man. Now, one of the other statements that we read earlier, and it's one of the first things you'll see if you go to the website, because it's really one of their taglines. Michael?
I was just going to say that into that verse there is a whole, and it leads on to the next verse that says that we can't support our children, cause to and fro, carry about with every wicked doctrine, by the slight of them, kind of crackles whereby they lie awake to the sea. I mean, that goes right along.
I'm glad you caught that. That's a good continuation of that. But I mean, we're seeing lots of examples here where it's very crafty, right, and very subtle. Hopefully, it's you know, to us it's maybe less subtle because hopefully we recognize some of these things for what they are. But think about the world that doesn't, think about folks that don't really know the Scriptures. And they see those kinds of billboards that we've been looking at and they hear these kinds of phrases, they're not going to recognize those things for what they are. And there's so many people that are going off after these things. But this phrase, that you can be good without God, that's become one of their taglines. And you'll notice that all over their information, is that that's, again, they're trying to provide their definition of good, okay, when we think about it. But again, who in here doesn't want to be good, right? Everybody wants, well, not everybody, but most people want to be good, right? And so here, what are they trying to advocate? They're trying to say, well, you can be good without God. And, of course, they have a perfect path to take you down to show you how you can be good without God. And, you see, literally, you see billboards like this. It was a few years ago, I think there was one that was like this in the Charleston area. But they're all over the country from time to time. They'll decide to run an ad campaign. A lot of times they'll run campaigns around Christmas time to sort of attack God at Christmas time, since there's so many people focused on Christ at that time, and they sort of take that as an opportunity to go the other way. But they spend lots and lots of money trying to advertise and persuade people to go down this path. Now, let's talk for just a few minutes about the different methods that they're using to really push this philosophy. So we read earlier in Colossians 2 and verse 8 where it said, he tells us, beware lest any man spoil you. And so he wants us to be on guard, to not be spoiled. And so we need to recognize the methods that our enemy is using against us to try to spoil us. And there's some big methods that are being used, and it includes through the government, through the passing of different forms of laws. It includes through our schools, it includes through the church, and it also includes the media. And the humanist organizations and these other organizations are all coming together, pooling together their money, soliciting money. You know, so they're lobbying in Washington, they're promoting, and they're taking part in what goes into our school textbooks that then get propagated out to all the students. They're developing curriculums that get used for Bible class in churches. And then they're all over the media. And so they use all of these different forms to try to persuade people to go astray, to go after humanism. You can go do a Google search and you will find humanism is everywhere. I think the last time I did this, we were in India. Put a slide here just to talk about what the Indian humanist organization was focused on at that time. But it's everywhere. And unfortunately, they are having success. All this advertising, all these methods that they're using in the schools and through the governments of passing different types of laws. All of these movements that we hear about, where we hear about things like the trying to take out school prayer, trying to get rid of the Ten Commandments in our courtrooms, all of these things, you can go onto the humanist website, you can see all of these things listed there. I mean, it's like a one-stop shop for, if you ever wondered, who's behind all these things to take out school prayer, to take God out of all these things, you'll find it right there with the humanist organizations. They're the ones that are really, really focused on working to subvert and get God out of society. And it's all there for you to go read about. This is not something that's a theory that I have or that somebody else has. It's all laid out in the open, and they'll be perfectly happy for you to join. they're soliciting your membership, and they want your money because they want to keep growing this effort. So just go take a look at the website sometime. But unfortunately, you know, there are surveys that are taken from time to time. And, of course, you have to wonder a little bit about whether the surveys themselves are being tampered with. But, you know, it is, at least what the surveys will tell you, is that things like this, where the number of Americans claiming to be religious dropped about 13% in 7 years from 2005 to 2012. They say at the same time, in the same period of time, that the number of atheists rose from about 1% to about 5% of the population that claims to be atheists. There's other ways that they've sort of sliced and diced the polling, where they've asked people, well, are you affiliated with any religion? And this is kind of a breakdown by age. And so what's very clear there is that the older population, 90% are affiliated with some religion, right? There's only a small percentage of older folks that aren't associated with any religions. But what do you notice there? You notice that as the ages go down, that the ones that are interested in religion are less and less. And we need to realize, well, that's not just happening by accident, right? It's happening because of these efforts that the humanists are making to get God out of society. It's really having an effect. We want to take a look at a few statements before we run out of time, from ones that have been involved with the schools for a long time, just to understand that schools are a super important method that are used. So here's a statement from a humanist that says, the most important factor moving us toward a secular society has been the educational factor. He says, our schools may not teach Johnny to read properly, but the fact that Johnny is in school until he is 16 tends to lead towards the elimination of religious superstition. So here he's making the point that, well, we might not do a good job teaching Johnny to read, but we sure can teach him how to not be religious. Here's an interesting statement from a political candidate who, sometime in the 1800s, when he was running for office and talking about what his objective was in politics. He says here the object was to get rid of Christianity. Okay, so there are people in politics that are interested in getting rid of Christianity. So it's kind of funny how he somehow came out and made this quote here, but he said the plan was not to make open attacks, but to establish a system of state schools from which all religion was to be excluded and to which all parents were to be compelled by law to send their children. And he goes on to talk about a society they formed to try to work to bring that about. So the point here is that there are folks that are working in the governments and through the schools to try to promote taking God out of things. Here's a quote from Andrew Carnegie, a very, very famous billionaire from the early 1900s, widely esteemed among men. And what was his view? Well, he says men of wealth should form a synthetic free enterprise based on cradle-to-grave schooling. And then he goes on to say the entire economy can be controlled and people will have a motivation to learn what you want them to learn. And he says it also places the minds of all children in the hands of a few social engineers. So Andrew Carnegie realized the power that could be wielded through schools and keeping people in schools and being able to have these social engineers that are sort of directing how society is going. And he saw the power of that. Here's some more. Here's a Nebraska state senator who also happens to be a humanist. And he was on a radio show and made this statement. He said, fundamental Bible-believing people do not have the right to indoctrinate their children in their religious beliefs because we, the state, are preparing them for the year 2000 when America will be part of a one-world global society and their children will not fit in. So here's a state senator saying the parents don't have the right to indoctrinate their children in religion because it's going to make them strange and they're not going to fit in with this one world vision that they had for coming about in the year 2000. So again, we see people in positions of power that are using those positions to try to work against God and against Christianity. This is a statement from that same fellow that we saw earlier who was one of the founding signers of the Humanist Manifesto 1 and who also established other organizations such as the Euthanasia Society of America and so on. But notice what he says here. He asks this question: what can a theistic Sunday school's meeting for an hour once a week and teaching only a fraction of the children do to stem the tide of the five-day program of humanistic teaching? So his point was, we can win this battle because we've got them for 5 days and we can teach them all day long. And, you know, here's the churches that have these students for an hour or two a week. They don't even have very many of them. His point is, we know how to win this battle through using the schools to promote these things. Here's a statement from Horace Mann, who is one of the founding member or fathers of the our modern educational system. He says here, what the church has been for medieval man, the public school must become for democratic and rational man. God would be replaced by the concept of the public good. So, you know, here's a humanist that realizes we're trying to replace God with the idea that you're going to do good, okay, and get people to exchange those two things. Here's John Dewey. A lot of us sort of indirectly know who John Dewey is if we've ever gone to the library, because he's the one. He's again one of the early education founders in the U.S., but he also invented what? The Dewey Decimal System, right? So John Dewey is very well known, but, you know, he also had some very, very strong positions about God. And he said, there is no God, and there is no soul. And then he says, hence there is no need for the props of traditional religion. With the dogma and creed excluded, then immutable truth is also dead and buried. There is no room for fixed natural law or moral absolutes. So, you know, here's John Dewey pretty plainly stating his position about God. There is no God. There is no soul. There are no moral absolutes. Okay? And I guess we need to ask him, well, is that absolute, what he just said? And that's where we find these. I mean, we've all heard about things such as situation ethics and those kinds of things. And that's where that idea comes from, is that there's no absolute truth. It just depends on what situation you're in as to what the right thing to do is. And that's one of the common things that they like to promote. So we could go on and on and on with this. And some of these statements are downright scary that we hear. You know, this is from a Harvard professor involved with education. It says, every child in America entering school at the age of 5 is mentally ill. Why does this professor believe they're mentally ill? He says, because he comes to school with certain allegiances to our founding fathers, our elected officials, and towards his parents, and towards a supernatural being. Okay, so that 5-year-old's coming in that he's been indoctrinated. So he's mentally ill. And so this Harvard professor then is talking to all these educators, saying it's up to you, teachers, to make all these sick children well by creating the international children of the future. So, you know, when we read the scriptures that talk about there being, and we'll fast forward to that since I have it here a little bit later. I guess the one other slide that I'll just talk about is John Dewey. I've got to get to the end of my presentation here. Well, I thought I had the scripture down here. But we passage that teaches us that we need to beware of spiritual wickedness in high places, right? I mean, isn't that exactly what we've been seeing with some of these things tonight, that spiritual wickedness goes to the very highest places in our world. I mean, we just saw quotes from university professors, from senators, from organizations that are lobbying in Washington every day. So we're seeing different officials that have power that are actively working against what the Lord wants. And so we don't need to be ignorant of that fact. Again, you can, all of us can go out and look at the websites and see how much they want us to join their efforts, right, and be a part of what they're trying to do here. They're not trying to hide this. It's all very open. And so, what we're trying to do here is that we want to understand that and beware so that we're not spoiled by these philosophies that are being pushed out there, and that we're aware of these things that are in our books and in our billboards and in our radios and everywhere else. Everything we hear, we need to be discerning and recognizing Satan at work in these different methods and not fooled into going after these types of beliefs. So I hope this will give us some motivation to be careful as we're starting our new school year, that we'll be watching out for, you know, if you're in school, be watching out for yourself, and if you're a parent or grandparent, to be watching out for your kids, to say, hey, this is not right here, and point out what the scriptures have to say to make that clear, so that we're not led astray here. So I hope we'll all think about some of these things that we've studied. Any questions or other comments that folks have?